And a good Monday morning to you. Welcome into the Nick Craig Show, streaming live this morning on YouTube, Rumble, and X. Hopefully you had a great weekend. Thanks for spending some time with us here on this Monday morning. And boy, do we have a busy show coming up for you today. We'll be joined by New Hanover County Commissioner Dane Scalise coming up in about 30 minutes. We'll talk about his push to dismantle DEI initiatives taking place with your taxpayer dollars here across New Hanover County. But before we start with that, or before we get into that, I should say, we've got to start with the big economic news that you've probably have seen and been reading about over the weekend. And it's one of what Trump says is his favorite words: tariffs. And it is having a major effect, at least as of the early parts of this morning, as we are looking at some of the future pre-markets. Things are looking pretty rough in regards to the trading markets early. The Dow futures down about 612 points, S&P futures down 94, NASDAQ futures down 384. We'll keep that ticker on the bottom of the screen here while we discuss Trump's tariffs. They went into effect over the weekend, and Trump signed an executive order authorizing a 25% additional tariffs on imports from Canada and Mexico. With that executive order, he also signed an additional 10% tariffs on imports from China. Energy imported from Canada, including oil, natural gas, and electricity, will also be taxed at an additional 10%. So here's the issue, and we will be diving much deeper into this tomorrow morning. We'll be joined by economist Vance Ginn coming up tomorrow to do a deeper dive into tariffs. We'll see how everything shakes out today. If these tariffs are temporary and they are set to get concessions from Canada and Mexico and, of course, China down the road, then that is what it is. It's Trump's attempt to try and regain and gain some sort of bargaining from the countries, in this case, Canada and Mexico, that we're talking about, that now have these 25% tariffs on them. But the real-world practicality of tariffs, whether you like it or not, is higher prices for U.S. consumers. You can be the biggest Trump fan in the world. You can argue till you're blue in the face. Tariffs will have a major impact on goods in the United States. And let's just start with oil and natural gas coming out of Canada. Folks in the Midwest, where the majority of their supply comes from that area, are going to see an increase in prices. And you might say, well, we've got to do this stuff because we've got to get concessions from Canada and Mexico. We've got to get back on track. I don't disagree with that. I don't think anybody disagrees that the United States is getting taken advantage of in regards to trade. That is the premises of all of this. This is where the conversation starts and finishes for President Trump. He continues to say that we are getting taken advantage of, and he's right. We absolutely are. But I will remind you, and I will ask you to think back and look back at political polling ahead of the election. That political polling was very clear. American consumers were incredibly frustrated with pricing. This wasn't always a guarantee, but pretty much every political poll that we looked at, that we looked at ahead of the election, even going back a year, showed very clearly that prices slash the economy slash jobs were the biggest, was almost always the top issue for American voters. Almost always. Every once in a while, something else would sneak up into the first place: crime, immigration, something like that. But for the most part, speaking broadly, it was the economy, prices, inflation, jobs, something related, something in those fields. And so the real question is going to be, can U.S. consumers and will U.S. consumers be willing and physically able to put up with short-term increases in pricing? Because that's what we're talking about. That's what we're heading towards. how long does this go on? How long do these tariffs stay in place? That remains to be seen as of this morning. The global markets are pretty spooked by it because there's essentially an all-out trade war going on as we speak, because Canada and Mexico each announced retaliatory tariffs on U.S. imports Saturday. They did this, of course, in retaliation to the tariffs that Trump put in effect. So they have already kind of clapped back against this. Now, the president was asked about this last night when he was flying back to Washington, D.C. He was at a Joint Base Andrews in Maryland and was asked about the tariffs. Trump's a smart guy. He understands economics. He's not a fool or an idiot when he comes to this stuff, contrary to what some folks would make you believe or think. And this is what this is what President Trump had to say last night. Take a listen.
We may have short-term some a little pain, and people understand that. But long-term, the United States has been ripped off by virtually every country in the world. We have deficits with almost every country. Not every country, but almost. And we're going to change it. It's been unfair. That's why we owe $36 trillion. I'm speaking with Prime Minister Trudeau tomorrow morning, and I'm also speaking with Mexico tomorrow morning. And I don't expect anything very dramatic. We put tariffs on. They owe us a lot of money, and I'm sure they're going to pay. They don't take our cars. They don't take our farm products. They take almost nothing. And we take everything from them, millions of cars, tremendous amounts of food and farm products. So the UK is way out of line, and we'll see the UK, but European Union is really out of line. UK is out of line, but I'm sure that one, I think that one can be worked out. But the European Union is, it's an atrocity, what they've done. Secretary of State Rubio is in Panama right now, and we're talking about the Panama Canal. What they've done is terrible. They violated the agreement. They're not allowed to violate the agreement. China's running the Panama Canal. That was not given to China. That was given to Panama foolishly. But they violated the agreement, and we're going to take it back, or something very powerful is going to happen. USAID, run by radical lunatics, and we're getting them out. And then we'll make a decision.
So that's a kind of a clip, a couple of comments that Trump made in regards to tariffs yesterday when he was on his way back to the White House. That a clip there from the Associated Press. And the president admitted just what we were talking about. Short-term price increases in the United States. And again, none of this to discount the fact that the trade imbalance that we see here in America is significant. Absolutely. But I do have some serious concerns, again, going back to the political polling that we looked at and very much drove the outcome of the election last year. A lot of that was surrounding the economy, prices, inflation, the costs of goods and services. You're all familiar with that. And so the question is, once again, will and can American consumers deal with some short-term pains for potentially, not guaranteed, but for potentially long-term benefits? Does the cost outweigh the good here? We don't know. There's too much up in the air right now. There's too much that's unknown, but that's where we stand. I mean, even Fox Business says right here in their article, the tariffs, if sustained, could cause inflation to significantly worsen after Trump vowed on the campaign trail to lower prices of groceries, gasoline, housing, cars, and other goods. That's a fact. Trump did promise those things to the American consumers. So can he do both at the same time? Are these short-term tariffs to get Trudeau and the Mexican government to the table to then figure out some sort of new trade agreement? In the short term, and we're talking real short term, the impact will probably be minimal. But if that's unsuccessful, if those deals do not come to fruition, do we keep these 25% tariffs on long term? because that will sink the United States economy. There's no question about that. And you're seeing some of the warning calls coming out from individuals that Trump works very close with. I saw a clip over the weekend of Steve Forbes, who was on, Steve Moore, who was on Trump's former economic council, who said he had just spoken with the president over the weekend. And he is very concerned about these tariffs. He is very concerned about the impact that this could have on the U.S. economy. Trump's order also pledges to raise the rates if countries retaliate. So is that 25%? If they retaliate, it could go up. They did retaliate over the weekend. So that could cause even more economic issues, more economic disruption. Canadian Prime Minister Justin Trudeau said at a news conference announcing the tariffs, quote, "The actions taken today by the White House split us apart instead of bringing us together." He announced that Canada would be placing a 25% tariff on up to $155 billion worth of U.S. imports, including alcohol and fruit. Trudeau expressed what he believes is a betrayal that many Canadians are feeling. And Trudeau warned of economic pain due to tariffs and encouraged Canadians to, quote, "choose Canadian products and services rather than American ones." And that's what you're hearing and seeing here in the United States as well. You go on social media, you'll see a lot of comments from individuals that say, well, just buy U.S. Well, of course. That doesn't sound bad on paper. I don't think anybody would argue that it is not good to buy U.S. But the issue that we have here is the costs of U.S. goods are significantly more. And again, this is all a much larger discussion. This is all a much larger conversation. We have major issues within our U.S. economy. Too many of our goods, too many of our jobs have been outsourced. And it's a major issue for us. So, is there a discussion here? Absolutely. Do we need to seriously begin the process of gaining back major manufacturing in the United States? Yes. But the question is, at what cost? And at what period of time? Because as it stands right now, these tariffs are in place. As you heard from the president last night, he's having a meeting today with Trudeau. So maybe they come to some sort of agreement today. Said he will be speaking with leaders from Mexico sometime either today or maybe in the middle or latter parts of this week, and to get some of those concessions. My real fear and real concern is that voters, American consumers and individuals that supported Trump are going to be making their way to gas stations over the next couple of weeks, making their way to various stores over the next couple of weeks, and see a significant increase in pricing. And there's just no good way to justify to them that that's what needs to happen. Again, they are, of course, yes, they are concerned about American manufacturing. Yes, they are concerned about the future of the U.S. economy. But it comes down to something real practical, and I'm sure some folks don't want to hear this, but it's the truth. Can folks actually afford to deal with these? Because that's what we're talking about. Can the U.S. consumer that has been so beaten up over the last 4 years, do they have the financial means, the financial ability to deal with these tariffs in the short term? Or is Trump making a huge mistake? The verdict is not out on it yet. We unfortunately just kind of have to sit and wait and see what happens. And again, I'm looking forward to tomorrow morning. We'll be joined by PhD economist Vance Ginn, who worked in Trump's Office of Management and Budget in the last administration. He'll be able to bring us a lot more information on these tariffs, what exactly they mean, and how something like this plays out. because obviously what we're seeing right now, again, looking at the futures, things don't look super hot. And we'll watch what the rippling impacts look like, gas prices and things of that nature. So we'll keep an eye on that. That is likely to dominate the news cycle probably over a good chunk of this week. We'll keep an eye on it right here. Now, you heard at the end of Trump's clip there that Marco Rubio, Secretary of State, Marco Rubio was in Central America over the weekend, specifically in Panama, dealing with some issues there. And the Trump administration, well, they got a big win in Panama over the weekend. So taking a look at what went on there, the United States has gained some pretty serious concessions from Panama. The story reads as follows. U.S. Secretary of State Marco Rubio told the Panamanian President Jose Ruel on Sunday to reduce China's influence over the Panama Canal or face immediate consequences. Rubio met in Panama City with the president and said that Donald Trump had determined that China posed a, quote, threat to the canal and had violated a treaty concerning its neutrality, according to State Department spokesperson Tammy Bruce. And unless the situation changed, the U.S. would, quote, take measures necessary to protect its rights under the treaty. So that's what's being reported out of Panama. Rubio wrote in a post on X, quote, the United States cannot and will not allow the Chinese Communist Party to continue with its effective and growth control over the Panama Canal area. Now, the president of Panama, who is a conservative pro-business president, has described a previous Trump claim that Chinese soldiers were operating the canal as, quote, nonsense, and has continually insisted that the waterway, quote, is and will always be Panama's. The United States built the Panama Canal, in the which connected the Pacific and the Caribbean more than a century ago, and controlled it until the mid-1970s, and then it was completely handed over to Panama just before the turn of the century in 1999. So the treaty, as part of turning over the Panama Canal, was neutrality of the canal and allows the U.S. to intervene if that neutrality is violated. When attacking Chinese influence, U.S. critics of Panama have focused on two ports at either end of the canal, which are run by a company called Hutchinson Ports, which is an arm of a Hong Kong-listed conglomerate, CK Hutchinson Holding, under long concessions. They were renewed without a bidding process in 2021 for 25 years. And so it would seem that this conversation that, oh, don't worry, Canada doesn't have any major control over the canal, is not accurate, because we're seeing it right here. The president of Panama acknowledged Sunday U.S. concerns over the port and noted that his government has launched an audit of port concessions, which have a nearly 40% market share, amid speculation in Panama that they may be canceled. That says it's not clear, however, whether the cancellation of the Chinese concessions would be sufficient to satisfy the Trump administration, who has called the canal fees a, quote, complete ripoff and demanded that the United States take back the canal, at least in part. About 200 people marched in Panama's capital on Sunday carrying national flags and shouting Marco Rubio out of Panama while the U.S. Secretary meeting was going on. And here's really where the concessions come in. In another gesture, a gesture towards the U.S., the president of Panama said that Panama's participation in China's Belt and Road Infrastructure Initiative would not be renewed. Now, if you're not super familiar with Belt and Road, this is China's 21st century attempt at securing major portions of land, major portions of, I don't even know what you'd call it, just major influence. They go around the world with their Belt and Road Infrastructure Initiative. They build major pieces of infrastructure and then, of course, own them and operate them and take them over. It's happening all throughout portions of Africa, major, major influences in portions of South America. You're seeing this here in Panama. It is a brilliant effort by China to take major control and have major impacts over a lot of what we would call and would be pretty broadly described as a lot of developing nations. China comes in, builds a bunch of infrastructure. It's built right in the name, Belt and Road Infrastructure Initiative. And then China has a huge emphasis and position of power in these various places. Now, the Panamanian president did not give a date for its exploration, but did note that it would not be renewing its agreement with China for Belt and Road, which, by the way, it joined in 2017. The article goes on to say, in recent years, Chinese state-controlled companies have built a huge convention center close to the mouth of the canal and are constructing a new bridge over the waterway and a cruise ship port. Contracts that were secured through bidding processes where Beijing was seeking to build a new embassy on land near the canal until the U.S. objections killed the scheme. In a meeting with the Panamanian president and the Panamanian foreign minister, Marco Rubio also praised Panama's efforts to end illegal immigration and, quote, underscored the desire for an improved investment climate and ensure a level playing field for fair competition by U.S. firms. The number of migrants illegally crossing the Darien jungle between Panama and Colombia, which is a major international migration route towards the United States in recent years, has plunged since Trump took office. Numbers reportedly down 94% last month compared with the same month a year earlier, according to Panama's National Migration Authority. So a major win, at least it appears right now, a major win in regards to Panama. A major win on getting at least rid of parts of Chinese influence. This is something that Trump feels very strongly about. And it's something that I think the majority of the American public feel pretty strongly about. Major Chinese influence in places where the U.S. has a major vested interest, like the Panama Canal. The Chinese government is not stupid. They're very smart. They know exactly what they're doing, and they've done a masterful job at it. They've done a really, really good job at inserting themselves in places and countries all over the world. It's a very smart strategic plan, and under previous administrations, that of course, is, as you are well aware, very weak, very feckless, very useless, they've had great success because there was really nobody calling it out. There was nobody that was standing up to China, which I can say, in, at least in my opinion this morning, is our largest threat internationally. It's absolutely China. And we've seen just within the last couple of weeks since the Trump administration has taken over, since Trump has been inaugurated and is now in the Oval Office, we've seen him call out and be very strong against China, which I'm glad, which absolutely needs to be done. So we're seeing a whole bunch of different things going on this morning in regards to trade. Of course, talked about tariffs, talked about the situation ongoing in Panama. It is probably going to be a very busy news week, if I'd have to guess, and kind of look forward as to what the week to come looks like here. This first week of February should be probably a very busy one news wise. I want to remind you that you can get daily show notes and more by visiting patreon.com/Nick Craig. They include some bonus content, including a monthly hangout, which we did last week. Again, I can't thank everybody enough for their support of the program. We've got a couple of tiers available, $5, $10 a month. If you believe you're getting some value out of the program, I encourage you to head on over there, patreon.com/Nick Craig, and support the show there. It is greatly appreciated. Well, diversity, equity, and inclusion. This is not a new conversation. This is something that has been talked about a lot over the last couple of years, and you've seen a huge dismantling of DEI efforts at the national level. I saw an interesting post on social media overnight from the Department of Government Efficiency, noting that they have come close to, or at least identified, nearly $1 billion in federal DEI initiatives that they plan on putting some major, either scrapping completely or putting a major dent into, depending on the legality of some of it. $1 billion. Pretty remarkable. So we will dive deep into this discussion locally. We covered back a couple of weeks ago, New Hanover County Commissioner Dane Scalise sounding off at a New Hanover County Commission meeting about diversity, equity, inclusion here across portions of southeastern North Carolina. He'll join us and we'll have that conversation coming up here in just a few minutes. You're listening to The Nick Craig Show, streaming live this morning on YouTube, Rumble, and X. And welcome back to The Nick Craig Show, streaming live this morning on YouTube, Rumble, and X. Don't forget, you can take the show with you 24/7 on demand by listening to the podcast. It's available wherever you get your shows. Just search for The Nick Craig Show and subscribe to the show there. You can also listen online by visiting the website nickcraig.com. There has been a lot of discussion about diversity, equity, and inclusion, not necessarily just over the last couple of months, but it's really been brewing over the last couple of years. Things, of course, changing big time up in Washington, D.C. with the new Trump administration. And there's also some work ongoing locally as well in regards to that. To get some more details on that this morning, it's my pleasure to welcome New Hanover County Commissioner Dane Scalise to the Nick Craig Show this morning. Dane, thanks for the time this morning. Tell us about a county commission meeting that took place a couple of weeks ago and some of the outrage that is pouring in here this morning.
Mr. Nick, it is a delight to be on your new show, this great format that you have going on. I've really enjoyed listening to you tell us all about what's going on, keeping us looped in. You're one of the best in the biz. I'm so glad you're back doing this work. Nick, let me give you a quick background on where we are and where I think we're going as regards the DEI issue. A couple of weeks ago, the New Hanover County government had a meeting. It was on a Tuesday. We normally have meetings on Monday. And the reason for this was that Monday was Martin Luther King Jr. Day. And so we moved the meeting to the next day. The DEI department had put together a proposed proclamation, basically on the notion, Day of Racial Healing, right? And I did not recognize this proclamation. I'd never seen it before. I've been on the commission for 2 years now, and it occurred to me, well, it's interesting that we're adding this now. I don't know anything about this proclamation. They've got it listed under the consent agenda, and the consent agenda, just so that you and your audience understand, means we're not even really probably going to talk about this. We're just going to all vote unanimously on this subject because it's so agreeable, no one would even question it. We always have items that are on the consent agenda. You do it in part just to remove some of the time barrier that might exist over debate over things that really aren't debatable. And there are plenty of those. But this one was totally debatable to me, especially after I looked into it and discovered that it was a brainchild of the W.K. Kellogg Foundation. Surely you have heard of it before. They're one of those major organizations that funds all kinds of causes over the years. Interestingly enough, Kellogg, pretty darn conservative guy, left a bunch of money to his organization. And over the last century, they have transformed into one of the most left-wing groups on the planet. And one of their initiatives is this Day of Racial Healing. And essentially, mm-hmm. It is critical race theory. It is the notion that there are original sins, that people are assigned based on their skin color, that we must apologize to one another in perpetuity in order to get past those original sins, when in fact you can't actually get past them because you've got to keep apologizing about them forever and always. And I totally reject that worldview. I do not think that we should be regarding one another as individuals who are at fault or at blame because of our respective skin colors in 2025. We should not be looking or thinking about one another in that way. And unfortunately, programs like the W.K. Kellogg Foundation and their initiatives, including the Day of Racial Healing, perpetuate just that. So I said, I'm going to speak out against this. And I gave a fairly long, almost 10-minute long discourse into why I opposed the proclamation, and then went further into why I oppose the county's DEI department and why I think that it is time, past time, for us to stop funding the county's DEI department. And, you know, I felt good about what I said. I felt convicted about what I said. We had a vote, and I ended up being the only person that voted against the proclamation. And so it goes. I understand in some ways that it's hard to come out and challenge the conventional wisdom and the prevailing winds that are sometimes out there. But the truth is the winds have, they're turning. They've turned. As you've already indicated, the president right off the bat said the federal government's not going to be allowed to do this anymore. You're not going to be able to use race to discriminate for a positive reason, which is how it's always been couched with DEI departments, right? Like, yes, we're discriminating, but we're doing it for a good reason. No, you're not allowed to discriminate against people in the United States based on racial immutable characteristics in hiring practices. The Supreme Court just addressed this issue as regards college admissions last year and said you cannot use race to determine someone's admissibility to college. The logical, natural conclusion of that, of course, is that government, very likely private sector employers, similarly cannot use race in their hiring practices. So I'm afraid that New Hanover County has been doing just that. There are actually plenty of examples all over the websites and our postings over the years of us apparently going out of our way to socially engineer certain increases in populations of people within our workforce and decrease certain populations of people within our workforce. And I think, and I hate to say this, but if somebody were to look into it, they would probably determine that New Hanover County has been breaking the law. And rather than continue on in that fashion, I am advocating for us to fix our mistake. It is time to fix this mistake. It is time to remove the DEI department from county funding.
New Hanover County Commissioner Dane Scalise joins us this morning on the Nick Craig Show as we talk about DEI at the local and federal level. And Dane, I'm glad you brought up the college admission issue, because one of the biggest culprits was Chapel Hill. I mean, the star of the case was here in North Carolina. And you've continually brought up this idea that the county is potentially putting themselves in a position where they're opening up to some sort of litigation, some sort of legal issue down the road. How big of a concern do you think that is? And I guess from a taxpayer standpoint, why should I care? Why should anybody care that that's an issue? The county's got lawyers, Dane. The county's got money. Who cares? Why is this an issue?
Well, we have lawyers, but in all likelihood, what our lawyers would do if we were to get sued, and let me be clear, I don't want us to be sued. I would rather us be in compliance with the law and not be sued, right? I'm not prognosticating or hoping for a lawsuit, but I also understand risk assessment well enough to see risks and call them out. That's part of my job as county commissioner, is to call out potential risks and to keep the taxpayer safe. Because exactly to your point, if we are sued, if it is determined that we have violated the Constitution in our hiring practices by illegally preferencing people and hiring based on racial characteristics, we can be sued. Not only will we have to have our in-house lawyers end up hiring outside counsel, but if there is some recovery, and that's either in the form of a settlement or a judgment in court, that's essentially something that the taxpayer is on the hook for. Now, in all likelihood, probably an insurance policy would cover the money that would have to go toward both the defense as well as the judgment or settlement, but not always. And the insurance companies sometimes disclaim liability, and they said, no, you were out of compliance with the law. We're not going to defend you in this. we have an exclusionary policy clause that allows us to get out of defending you or paying your claim because you did not follow the law whenever you're supposed to. Now, I'm not saying that exists, but it could. And in any event, we're paying you, the taxpayer, me, the taxpayer, everyone else, 240,000 people, that they're paying for that county attorney's salary. They're paying for those insurance policies. And they're ultimately going to have to pay for the embarrassment of having to go through a process of having to be determined to have broken the law. And again, I hope that they haven't, but I've seen enough to suggest that they probably have. And that gives me great pause.
Yeah, Dan, we go back to discussions that have taken place in years past. Port City United is one of those examples. It was an entity that looked good on paper. It looked like they had a noble goal of reducing violence and dealing with some of the issues in our community. Unfortunately, our audience here this morning knows the disaster that was Port City United. You spearheaded some of the charge to get rid of that. Do you see some similarities between Port City United and all of these stated mission goals and what's going on within the diversity, equity, and inclusion department within the county right now? Is, again, the things sound good. We want to have a diverse community. We want people to be included and we want an inclusive government. But is that actually what's happening in practicality, or as are we doing what you're kind of noting, discriminating against people, which would be against the goal of the organization from the start?
Oh, those are very good questions, Nick. I'm going to begin with the point that you made about Port City United, and I actually have to give credit to a local media organization that was trying to insult me in writing some commentary about me, but they ended up writing a great compliment to me whenever they said, "This is not Scalise's first crusade to cut whole departments from the county budget." And hey, Nick, like in however many years I have left on this planet, hopefully a few, put that on my tombstone. Cutter of entire departments.
Crusader, right? I mean, of entire departments, yeah.
Crusader against governmental departments. Let me just say something that I say all the time, but it bears repeating. Local government especially should be laser focused on providing core services. We should be laser focused on water and sewer, public safety, education, a couple of other items that we could get into, but it's the core items that we should be doing really, really, really well. And a lot of extraneous stuff that I don't want us doing, I don't want us paying for. The private sector can do it if it's a worthwhile cause, if it's something that means enough to the public. But we should be laser focused on those items. Whenever we start adding in all these other items, including DEI, including Port City United, even if you want to look at it in the best possible light, is it really the proper role of government? Well, I'm a limited government conservative, so the answer to me is clearly no. But even if you take it beyond that analysis, you have to say to yourself, what about that liability piece? What about the morale piece? You know, I have employees that confidentially reach out to me because they don't want to say anything. They're afraid to say something because they think that they're going to get the ban hammer. You know what the ban hammer is, right?
Sure. Like,
I mean, that's internet lingo for the kids. I'm still hip. I'm still cool. I know some of the things that people talk about. They probably don't say ban hammer anymore. That was like 20
shadow banned or something of that nature.
but they're afraid. They're afraid of a negative consequence of speaking out against the DEI regime. And the reality is that the DEI regime hurts morale. There are some people that it maybe helps because they're in a position to be over other people and dictate what they're allowed to think and what they're allowed to look at and where, what meeting they have to show up to and what, we go on and on and on. But a lot of people just want to go to work and do their jobs. They don't need to be socially conditioned, socially engineered toward a particular way of thinking. And DEI, in my estimation, not only has all these hallmarks of illegality and unconstitutionality, but it also is just a stalking horse for a lot of left-wing causes. They use it to sort of shoehorn in all the social conditioning. And that's part of what they've been trying to do to me on the commission for some time. One of the things that I talked about during that meeting where I gave my opposition to the Day of Racial Healing was that the DEI department also facilitated this letter from the Latino-Hispanic coalition that we put together. And the letter basically said, hey, you've been saying a lot of, you commissioners, we do not approve of anyone using any kind of negative language about immigrants. And I said, what are you talking about? I mean, where did this letter come from, first of all? Why is the DEI department sending me this unsolicited letter? Why are they sending it to the other commissioners? And none of the other commissioners said anything, but I wrote back to them and I said, well, give me some examples. What are you talking about?
Sure. Yeah.
And they said, well, you know, there are a lot of mean things about the whole Mosley school situation, which you'll remember that was one of my big advocacy crusader items last year, where I said, heck no, we ain't closing a school for kids with special needs and replacing it with a migrant facility. We're not doing that. Well, apparently that was mean. And it's an end around way for us to pass a resolution that essentially says, you're not allowed to speak out against illegal immigration. That's what they want to say, so that they can look to the official New Hanover County government, Dane Scalise, as well, Republican Dane Scalise. Even he agreed, don't say mean things. But then they use that to make other people feel like they're not allowed to use their voices. They're not allowed to oppose legal immigration. And why is our DEI department constantly propositioning resolutions like this? And again, it's because I think they have a political objective that's inherent in their charter. Not only the illegality, they have a political motivation, and I'm over it. That's not what government should be doing. Government should be providing core services to people, the best possible core services at the lowest taxable amount reasonably possible.
Dan, I want to wrap up on this. I kind of see two different vehicles and avenues here. Obviously, these departments, in the case of New Hanover County or wherever else, they have to justify their existence, and the way they do that is these letters that they send to you over the Christmas holiday, doing these proclamations and posting on social media about whatever day it might happen to be. But Dan, let's just ignore all of that. Let's cut politics out of any of this here. I have a legitimate question for you as a taxpayer of New Hanover County. Does the Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion Department in New Hanover County, what does that bring to the county? What kind of metrics as a taxpayer can I look at when I'm paying my property tax bill and say, well, these are some of the things that I'm getting? What sort of metrics are they bringing to the table, to the equation?
Some very disturbing ones in my estimation, Nick. One of the things that I saw that New Hanover County government provided to the media or to the public, showing how it's succeeded over the last several years, is essentially describing that they have increased the proportion of Black citizens that are in the employ of New Hanover County relative to the actual population in New Hanover County. So as a for instance, I'm going to read you a direct quote. The county has improved the diversity within its ranks. As of January 2023, its employees are 73% white, 19% Black, 4.8% Hispanic. This is compared to the county's overall population demographic, which is 77% white, 12% Black, and 6.4% Hispanic. So, in fact, under what they have provided for people to consider, one of the markers of their success is we were able to hire more Black people in New Hanover County. And I am telling you, Nick, that is not a proper role of government. That is an unconstitutional and illegal motivation. We should not be preferencing our hiring decisions based on people's skin color. And that is not to say that I don't, hey, look, Nick, if it ends up being the case that 40% of New Hanover County's workforce ends up being Blacks, that's fine if it's based on merit.
Sure.
But if we're hiring people because of their skin color, we are doing something that is immoral. We are doing something that is unconstitutional. And I will not support it. And yes, I will tell you, it's frustrating, Nick. I mean, I wish that whenever I have been crusading on these issues, that I wouldn't have people reach out to me and tell me some of the worst things in the world that you can imagine. But I will also tell you that that is a fringe minority of people. The overwhelming majority of the comments that I receive from the community, people I do not know, are highly supportive. They are craving, they are looking for someone to stand up and say, that's not right, And they know, by the way, that I'm getting yelled at by some folks. And it's not pleasant to get yelled at. You've been yelled at once or twice.
Absolutely.
But that's what leadership is. You've got to be willing to let your principles stand on their own two legs and not let the slings and arrows knock you down. That's what I'm trying to do here. I sure would appreciate, I'll tell you, Nick, one of the things that I think would be wonderful, and maybe there's a logistical reason that this is not possible, but I would love to see some of our friends and colleagues in Raleigh take on the mantle in the same way that the president did in DC and start declaring that some of these policies across North Carolina are not allowed. And that if you want to receive state dollars, then you're going to have to be in compliance with the state law that says you can't discriminate based on race. I think the state government has the opportunity to do that. The state legislature has the opportunity to do that. And I would encourage them to consider it if they haven't already.
Dane, any final words as we close out the conversation this morning?
No, I think it's also just important to point out that whenever you're advancing a cause like this, and it maybe seems hard or harsh, I am doing this out of love. I am doing this out of love for my fellow man. I want a society where we truly are. Sure, I can recognize that somebody looks different than me. I don't know that I necessarily agree with the notion of a colorblind society in the sense that, like, I won't notice that this person has a different skin tone than me, right? That's inevitable. That's how humans operate. But are we able to get past the point where we're necessarily assuming the worst about one another because we look a little bit different from one another? That's where I want us to get to. Where we're able to look to one another, and rather than making an assumption about me because I look this way or you because you look that way, we're forced to get to know one another, and we're forced to, based on merit, ability, etc., make our assessments about, do I want to be around this person more? And I think that if we were to tamp down on some of this stuff, we would make that more achievable, because what this unfortunately does is it creates a destructive shortcut for assumptions about other people. Whenever you think that you can just look at someone else and know everything about them, that's wrong. That's not a healthy society that operates like that. And we need to unwind that. That's what I'm trying to do my part to work on.
Yeah, and it's unfortunately, you mentioned this at the beginning, that's exactly some of the teachings of critical race theory and where a lot of this stuff spawns. Dane, thank you so much for the time this morning. It's greatly appreciated. If folks have any questions, if maybe they want some words of encouragement, or maybe they want to challenge you on some of the points you've made this morning, how do they reach out to you? What's the best way to do that?
The two primary ways that I like to speak to the public is for them to either email me at my county email address, which is dscalise@nhc.gov. In the alternative, I'm very active on X. My X account handle is @DaneScalise. And you can see what I post and write about. And I encourage people to reach out to me. Councilman Kevin Spears and I are having a little bit of an X dialogue today. And he said he likes to keep it in the public sphere. And well, I do too, because actually that's a great way for the public to see how their elected officials regard these issues. And X, in my opinion, is a very good place to do that.
Dane, thank you so much for the time this morning. Greatly appreciated.
Good to be with you, Nick. Thank you very much.
That's New Hanover County Commissioner Dane Scalise joining us this morning on the Nick Craig Show. And it's pretty sad that we're at a point in, you know, I guess the world, but specifically here in our country, specifically here, New Hanover County, the United States, that we are having to have a discussion about an entity and this overall organization that is DEI, diversity, equity, and inclusion. As I mentioned during the interview, it sounds great on paper, but in practicality, with all of these different entities that have spun up, which as we've talked about, is a multi-billion-dollar a year industry. And in New Hanover County, you as the taxpayers are spending in the tune of $600,000 a year on the department. That's what the budget is for the Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion Policy Department in New Hanover County, north of $600,000 a year, which, by the way, almost all of that money is going towards salaries. The operating expenditures of the department are less than $70,000 a year, meaning that all the rest of the money, more than $500,000+ of it, is going towards salaries, creates a very destructive environment, creates potentially an illegal environment. As Commissioner Scalise noted, we saw what happened with these practices in regards to college admission, thrown out by the United States Supreme Court. You can't discriminate against somebody based on their race. And the fact that that is where this conversation surrounds is incredibly concerning. But that's what's going on. That's what we're seeing. And that's exactly what's happening. These departments are incredibly divisive in what they do. They have to justify their existence, and that's one of the key portions of all of this. They have to justify their existence by walking down this line. Because without it, they wouldn't be able to justify a $600,000 a year budget. They wouldn't be able to justify that unless they were bringing forward these proclamations, wanting the county commissioners to sign off on a letter dealing with illegal immigration. Since when does a local county government decide what federal immigration law is? Since when does a local county or a municipality believe it is appropriate to break federal law? But that's what we've seen over the last couple of years. Look at all these sanctuary cities that have popped up here across New Hanover, across the United States. All of these sanctuary municipalities where they say, to hell with the federal government, to hell with federal immigration law. We're going to be a sanctuary this or a sanctuary that. Sanctuary county, city, town, whatever it might be. Just completely spitting in the face of federal law. And of course, it's cheered on by the left because they don't like following those laws. They'd rather not have them there. So the solution is to say, oh, well, we're a sanctuary county, we're a sanctuary city. And Commissioner Scalise noted this back on that county, back during the county commission meeting that took place back in mid-January, talking about how it was clear and obvious from the various proclamations that he's seen that are likely to come forward, that that's what the attempt is, to make New Hanover County a sanctuary county. And for what? Since when do we not follow federal immigration law? Since when do we decide that it's inappropriate to call out crimes and individuals that are breaking the law, that are doing things illegally? That's what's happening. That's exactly the case. Here's the good news. And Commissioner Scalise noted this during the interview. DEI is over. The wind has completely shifted directions. You saw it on Trump's first day in office. You're seeing it now through DOGE, the Department of Government Efficiency, that they are scrapping and gutting these departments. Because in most cases, it's just a racketeering scheme for individuals to make a bunch of money. Imagine what the salary is for some of these DEI consultants. You've got these major companies that are essentially blackmailed into hiring DEI companies or DEI contractors or consultants to come in at the tune of hundreds, if not millions of dollars, hundreds of thousands, if not millions of dollars a year. It's a major business. That's why the emphasis is so strong pushing against it. There are so many people making so much money perpetrating this fraud, this scam. And the spigot is, in my estimation, getting ready to be turned off. We are absolutely seeing a major title change in regards to DEI, and for good. Actually getting back to a position where we hire and look at individuals based on their merit, and stop trying to fill quotas of this, quotas of that. That charade is over. And it's going to take, and you heard some of the comments, states need to fall in line with the federal government. I think it would be a great thing for our North Carolina General Assembly, our Republican-controlled legislature, to take a book or take a line out of Trump's book on DEI. Gut and scrap this garbage at the state level. And put these counties on notice that want to actively work against both the state and federal government. We had a referendum in November. People are annoyed and fed up with what they've seen over the last couple of years. They are done with this very destructive policy or policies that are being brought in by the left. They're done with it. And for good reason. So appreciate Commissioner Scalise's time this morning. If you missed any portion of that on the live program, encourage you to head on over and check out the podcast in your favorite podcast app. Just search for The Nick Craig Show, and you can listen on your own time, whatever portion throughout your day, and also listen online at nickcraig.com. Well, tomorrow morning, we are going to do a much deeper dive into tariffs and the impacts that those are potentially going to have for U.S. consumers that are seeking relief. Final check of the pre-market futures this morning. The Dow futures down about 676 points. S&P futures down 106. NASDAQ futures down 424 as of right now. So likely to see a pretty rough day on the stock market. We'll keep an eye on that and bring you all those details. We'll be joined by former Trump OMB Office of Management and Budget economist Dr. Vance Ginn. He'll join us coming up tomorrow right here on the program. Don't forget that if you'd like to support the show, you can do so by heading on over to patreon.com/Nick Craig, where you get access to our daily show notes and bonus content. That's patreon.com/Nick Craig. That's going to do it for a Monday edition of the Nick Craig Show. Thank you so much for joining us live on YouTube, Rumble, and X, or anytime via our podcast. We're back tomorrow morning right here on the Nick Craig Show.